the first meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee, 14th Legislature, State of Alaska. Date is January 15, 1985. Time is 1:30. Members of the committee president are Representative Davis, Representative Boucher, Representative Pierce, and Representative Navarro. Has everyone present signed up who intends to testify? Today is an informal work session, Labor and Commerce Committee, meeting with Commissioner Robinson from Department of Labor and some of his staff. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to the Commissioner, and he'll give us a brief overview, and I imagine his staff will also. Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. kind of honored to be the first, because generally we're the last. I'm hoping that maybe you will look at the Department of Labor in the light that I do. It's probably the best in the state, and I have the best people working for me. And we appreciate the opportunity to come here and tell you about it. One thing that before we get started with the Department of Labor, this right here is people helping people. It's a share campaign, and I sent all of the new legislators a copy of that so that you could actually sign up, take the deductions out of your check if you wanted to get into the United Way. And honestly, I hadn't heard from any of you guys and gals, so think about that a little bit. If you don't have the material, I'll make sure that you get it again. We'd be honored to have you part of the share campaign.
For the record, excuse me, Commissioner, for the record, Representative Hanley is now present.
Yeah, I think the way that I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, if I might, maybe just briefly tell you the boards and commissions that the Department of Labor works with, maybe some of the issues that were in the last two sessions, and it's probably going to be carried over to this session, and then introduce the staff that will tell you about the different departments that I got. And this isn't in any order of priority, because we think all of the boards and commissions is needed to do our everyday business. But we do have the Workers' Compensation Board, and that's the board that hears the appeals on workers' compensation claims that are contested for whatever reason. We got two boards in the Anchorage area, one in Fairbanks and one in Southeastern. We also have legislation this year to add another board in South Central, so that I'll take some of the guys will have more time to devote to their jobs, as well as taking care of some of the workers' compensation claims. So we hope that you'll give us a hand with that. We have the Safety Advisory Council. That gives input to the governor on the different issues that they think is out there for the safety of the workers. We have a Fisheries Fund. That's Advisory Council, and they take care of the people that actually was hurt while doing fishing. Employment Security Council, we try to run all of the legislation, employment security, unemployment, for that board, and it's made up of all the industries, the private sector, and hopefully we get a concurrence from labor management in that board before we propose any legislation. And I think the last one is the OSHA Review Board, and that reviews citation for contractors, employers that we feel have violated the OSHA Act. That's the ones that we work with on a day-to-day basis. A couple other things that we've got out in the field is there's a remote dispatch that was in effect last year. What it is trying to get the native, the people in the bush into the workforce when work opportunities is available within the city. I understand that that's probably going to come back before you guys this year. It was a one-year-only type thing, and was supposed to sunset, but it looks like it did pretty good, and they're probably going to bring the thing back. The Apprenticeship Outreach Program, we have that within the Department of Labor. It's part of our budget, and that does a recruitment for all of the apprenticeship programs within the state, and we think that they do a commendable job, and we oversee that to make sure that they, in fact, are doing the job they say they are before we pay them the money. I think some of the issues that you're going to be faced that was carried over, the fluctuating work week, we spent about 2 years on that. That was House Bill 223. And in the second year, we had an awful lot of hearings on that bill. We found that there was some good testimony from both sides, the employer groups as well as labor. And we got together a committee to see if they couldn't sit down and work out their differences. And we understand that that the employers and the labor groups have come to an agreement so that there'll be some type of a proposal for a fluctuating work week that labor management as well as the Department of Labor can support. So I think that that issue is taken care of.
Jim, what bill was that, House Bill 53?
223.
223.
Charlie Bussell had that.
Yes.
We've also...
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Representative Davis.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Question, does the administration plan on introducing some legislation on that?
Well, what we hope will happen is the two sides, the FL-CIO as well as the employer groups, have the legislation written up. We asked them to introduce it through Labor and Commerce, and then we would be able to come in and testify for or against whatever the final project is. So it will not be the Department of Labor that's going to introduce it. It'll be those groups.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Another one that's been a problem with us is it's called Title 36, and really what that was is the prevailing wage rates. The governor had a mini cabinet, and on it was the Department of Labor, CRNA, and the Department of Transportation. And when we really got down into the nuts and bolts of it, we found that it wasn't just the prevailing wage rate. It ended up with local hire, and then that ended up with resident hire, and a number of other things. And to be honest with you, we've wrestled that problem for these 2 years. We've had a number of meetings, and when we think we're close to some type of a solution, something else surfaces. And so what we finally ended up doing is Bob Goldberg, we asked him to do a study. Senator Sackett, we sat down and talked to him through another party, the Department of Labor, and I guess everybody that was involved in it, to find out really what the issues were out there and to see if there was some way that maybe we could finally have a solution to that. He came back with a study 2 or 3 months ago, and that's been distributed to the different parties. They're researching it, seeing, you know, what he did come up with, and I would think that within 60 days we may have, I'm not sure we're ever going to get a solution to it, but it will at least identify where all the parties are, and hopefully, maybe I'll just dump it into the governor's lap at that time and say, here's what we got, do whatever you want with it. That has been probably the toughest one that we've had to deal with. The asbestos bill, I don't know if it was around for the first year, but for the second year it was a problem. And I think that already you've already proposed legislation in House Bill 5, I think it is. The Department of Labor is supportive of that bill, and probably all parts of it. The Associated General Contractors is going to come out against the certification, so you guys are going to have to deal with at least that portion of it. We think it's a good piece of legislation. It's something that's needed for a long time, and I think that the sooner that you can hit the street with it, the better off you are. There's one thing that I ask you to do. 2 or 3 months ago, we had another committee formed for this asbestos, made up of the people that actually work with it day to day, the apprenticeship program coordinators as well as contractor groups. They've got a public hearing, hopefully set up February the 15th, to come back with all of their findings on what we think are the problems out there and some of the ways that they think they could resolve it. So you may want to kind of coordinate that effort with some of your testimony, and hopefully you'll come up with a solution. I think the only other... Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Mr. Robinson, on the asbestos, who at the present time can provide that certification? Are there more groups within the state, or how does a worker go about becoming certified at the present time?
There's no one within the state that certifies the program at this time. There's, I think the asbestos workers and the laborers have a program that they certify that the guy has went through the training program, but there's no one that certifies that you're competent in.
But there is a program whereby a worker could go through a program and then be qualified to be an asbestos removal worker, is that correct?
Well, the asbestos workers and the laborers claim that they in fact have that, but I'm not sure that that's true. I'm not sure that it isn't, but there's no one within the state that certifies. Mr. Chairman, the only other one that I'd have is we proposed a plumbing code change a couple years ago, and actually we're working under the 1979 code now. We proposed that you pass the 1985, and the only, I think, problem with it is plastic pipe. Some of the industry says that plastic pipe is dangerous and you shouldn't use it. And, you know, if you guys want to, we really need to get that 1985 code in place. And if you guys want to do something with plastic pipe, delete it from Alaska or whatever, you know, do whatever you have to do. But see if you couldn't get that out on the street for us this year.
Representative Davis.
I'm sorry, Jim, I missed the first part of your testimony. I thought we adopt one of the uniform codes on plumbing and last year. Or was
well, you like passed it out, but the Senate didn't. Oh, it got buried in the committee, and it never came out of committee for 2 years. So. And I think with that, Mr. Chair, I think that's some of the problems that's carried over. And I think maybe if you'd like, maybe we could get right into the different programs. And I have Jack Shea from the Employment Security Unemployment that maybe we'd like to start off with him, put him out front first. And then we'll have Don Wilson from Labor Standards. And I think the way we really kind of want to go through with it is Jack puts the guys to work. And then if they have any problems down the line, Don Wilson's group then takes over if they have any wage claims or that. And then we'll probably get Jackie McClintock because she's workers' compensation. And then Dr. Thorne is a new doctor that we got us a new program started within the state to identify the health hazards that's out there and to work with contractors as well as employers. And maybe she'll give us a little bit of that. And we'll end up with Judy Knight with Administrative Services. She keeps track of all the money and makes sure that we don't overspend it. And I have with me today Eileen Plate. She's my special assistant. I like to call her Mother Superior because she takes care of all of us and makes sure that that everybody is straight. And she makes sure that when they try to put something over on me, that it's not done. She's been there a long time, and we really appreciate Eileen. And, so with that,
Mr. Chairman,
I have one question for you, Jim.
Yes.
When I was here 15 years ago, we started this Alaska Hire, and of course, it ruled unconstitutional. Have we really explored every avenue to see what we can do about putting Alaskans to work? It's on everybody's lips, but I'm just wondering if we have. To me, that's a major concern.
Well, you know, we lost a law case, lawsuit, this last year. James Francis out of Fairbanks, an iron worker, sued us saying that that was unconstitutional. In fact, the judge upheld that. We then appealed it, and we had a stay. So we are, in fact, right now upholding what's on the books. We're going out enforcing it on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of guys have said, well, why don't you look at it and see if you can't take care of what the problems are. I guess what my theory is that, you know, we can look at it and say, well, we think this is wrong with it, we think we could fix it by this way, but, and then if we come up with anything, I'm not sure that the opposition to the other side can use that against us. So I'm almost to the point that I first think that we got a pretty good shot at the Supreme Court of winning that thing, because we advanced some pretty good theories of the unemployment, and that's the reason that we're using our monies for that. So I think that we're better off to wait and see what the courts do with it, and then hopefully the courts will give us some guidelines saying that the reason that it's struck down is because this is wrong and this is wrong, and maybe just fix them two or three things instead of trying to guess what is wrong with the darn thing and giving the other side some more ammunition to really bury the thing. Because I think there's everybody in Alaska wants resident hire, and I think we just got to really find a way to get that done.
You think we can do it?
I know we can.
All right. Because I was just wondering where it was in this agenda. I know where it is in my agenda.
I do too.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Davis.
Perhaps we can talk about this another time, Tim, but it's related, I think. Up until about 2 years ago, I believe it was, the Department of Labor used to monitor the amount of people working on some of the leases up north, and there was some kind of a monitoring of who was working, Alaskans, non-Alaskans, whatever. And I think that was maybe within the last year that they stopped that monitoring and gathering of information. And I'm just curious if you know why they ceased doing that, and if there's any indication that you've heard of maybe perhaps beginning that again.
Yeah, I honestly don't know why it was stopped, but about a month or so ago I got a memo from the governor asking to look into that again. To go up and see who in fact is working there. So I'm not sure that that we're going to keep count month to month count, but I think that we will go up and maybe unannounced just walk in on some contractor and say, I want to look at your payroll, who you got working here, because we believe that there is an awful lot of Arkies and Okies and Missourians working up there that never touched ground in Alaska.
My best friends are Arkansas.
Yeah. Well, I was born in Kansas and I lived in Oklahoma. My mother's an Okie too, so I say that.
I thought you were from Texas.
No.
Well, I'd be real curious to find out what you dig up on that.
I guess that is private money, and
let's see.
I'm not sure what. I guess maybe if the contractor says, "What the hell are you doing in here?" I'm not sure I'd have an answer for him.
But the new, if I could continue, Mr. Chairman, the new leases have I'm not sure just what year they started that, but the new leases have it written in. It's not local hire law, but there's some at least some encouragements by those companies to hire Alaskans. And so I'm curious to see just what efforts being taken by those companies that have leases from the state of Alaska.
Representative Davis and other members of the committee. I'd like to point out today that this is just an opportunity for the commissioner to give us a brief overview, and we are under a time constraint. There's another committee that will be meeting in this room at 3 o'clock.
Jack Shitty, get on the hot seat here.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jack Shea. I'm former mayor of the city of Ketchikan. I've been on board for a little over a year, but I still have not learned not to wear my best suit for these, because every time I start talking about my people, I start busting buttons off my vest. And I intend to do the same thing today. I was going to introduce to you Mr. Willie Lewis, the governor's most recent appointee to the Employment Security Advisory Council, and he may indeed come in sometime during the session today. Our scenario will be, as the commissioner described, we're going to put the people to work. They're going to perhaps get hurt. They're going to lodge a wage claim. And they're going to get fired and come back for unemployment, and I will cover that also, or otherwise lose their jobs. The goal of our division promotes the well-being of the workforce by placing the unemployed in suitable work and paying temporary benefits to eligible claimants as they seek employment. I've got two basic programs. How do you do, sir?
Excuse me.
Two basic programs. Go ahead, sir.
For the record, Representative Copeland is now present. Senator Copeland, this is Jim Robinson, who is a commissioner
of labor. Sir, the two programs are employment services, and I may refer to them as ES, and unemployment insurance, which I may call UI. They work hand in hand to ease the social and economic consequences of unemployment caused by our dynamic economy. The infusion of dollars into local economies by maintaining the purchasing power of individuals unable to find work tends to stabilize that economy to the advantage of the community as a whole. Businesses also benefit from our programs because we have reduced costs in the screening of job applicants, the use of business statistics which are supplied through the labor market information system of our department. And last year, over 43,000 placements were made in jobs by our Employment Service Division, and over 54,000 individuals were served by our unemployment insurance program. To give you a brief overview of unemployment insurance, or UI, the federal state system, and most of the funding for the administration of the system comes from federal monies, was established in the 1930s in the midst of widespread prolonged depression. The misery and demoralization of millions of unemployed workers, the inability of local and state governments to finance relief for them, generated this program. And so the federal government realized the value of establishing a program which also had a linkage to the states so that the states may administer the programs more in line with their needs and desires. So the UI system of European countries and a limited number of private enterprises were studied, and they were used as a model for a program which was initiated in the early 1930s in our United States. And in fact, it started in Wisconsin. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. Unemployment insurance. Now, insurance, that's the key word that's operational here. It's not meant to be a welfare program, nor is it a savings account. Persons who draw insurance pay premiums, as their employers do, and they are eligible for benefits as having been members of the workforce. In other words, they have participated, they've contributed something to the economy, and that's why they're eligible for the insurance payments. And then when they become unemployed through no fault of their own, they are eligible for this program. And of course, it's not a savings account. Many times you will hear your constituents say, well, I paid money into this account, I should be able to draw it out any time that I'm unemployed. Well, you may think of that as analogous to perhaps your automobile insurance. You don't get paid for your auto insurance until the car gets wrecked through usually no fault of your own. You can't say, I paid all this money and now I want it back. At any rate, I mentioned the stabilizing influence of the unemployment insurance program. Think, if you will, as an analogy, a gyroscope. You realize that a gyroscope spins around at quite enormous speeds and maintains the stability that was given it on its original axis. And what occurs, if we may say that the moving top in the gyroscope is analogous to the total monies in the economy, and when the economy slows down, there is additional energy needed to place into the gyroscope to keep it stable. That is where unemployment insurance comes in. When the economy slows down in a particular area or statewide, those funds are available from the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund to infuse back into the economy to help keep things running, help people pay their bills, help shopkeepers stay open. To assist with this stability in communities, the state's UI program, unemployment insurance, if I'm guilty of acronyms, Mr. Chairman, slammed on your gavel, I'll stop. They paid benefits of over $85 million to 40,400 individuals in our state. That's just within the state. That's not counting the people who left, who shall sometimes remain nameless. These 40,000 people who drew this money, that's one-sixth of the labor force, by the way, over one-sixth of the labor force. This money was available to assist with the economy, as I have described. And with the changes which we have recently wrought in the taxing provisions of the law, we were able this past year to increase the benefit amount to individuals, and we will not be increasing the tax rate to employers or employees. Employees pay a small percentage of the total amount which goes into this trust fund. Also, the average tax rate for employers and employees in 1985 will be 15% lower than in 1984, while the tax base upon which the tax is figured will only be 3% higher. If I may refer you for a moment to the handout which you received, entitled Employment Security Information by Census Area, at the top, and has a number of figures, you will note that in the first column of dollar figures, you will see the UI, or unemployment insurance benefits, which were paid to the various census areas. Unfortunately, I did not have time to have this information arrayed by election district, but if you are interested in that, I can obtain that for you. This shows that of the almost $86 million of payments were made in the state, the various areas to which the benefits went, and the fact that the out-of-state payments represented only about 24 7/10% of the total amounts of money leaving the state for UI payments. This was a special concern to the legislature a number of years ago when, of course, a number of, shall we say, booming-type persons came in to work on the Alaska pipeline and then went down south and quite a larger percentage of our unemployment benefits were leaving the state. As you see now, somewhat over 75% of the benefits paid out do remain in the state. I should also say, if you wish, I can get these figures for any area that you would like. And these figures for the UI benefits paid are by calendar year. Unfortunately, the rest of the figures that you see in the last column are by federal fiscal year. We have to deal with 4 years in our business: the federal fiscal year, the state fiscal year, the program year, and the calendar year. And I know you grapple with some of these problems too. Spare us from these things. At any rate, these figures are for the calendar year. I might also reflect for an instant on the fact that the trust fund that we have is in very sound financial condition. There is currently over $170 million on deposit and is the most solvent fund in the nation in terms of the amount of money as compared to the total benefits, or total, excuse me, wages of the state. The total wages of the state covered under our programs, by the way, is very close to $5 billion. And as a curious sidelight, the total gross state product is around almost $22 billion these days. And the wages being $5 billion, we have designed a formula for the trust fund. So the trust fund will float between 3 and about 3 1/3% of the total wages of the state. And so it was $150 million a few months ago. Right now it's $170 million. So that is what will trigger a decrease in the rates. At any rate, this trust fund is in sound financial condition. There are a number of other states whose funds are not in this condition. I could mention about 21 other states who are in hock to the federal government. The feds don't like it much, and they are doing something about it. We will be affected by that, and I'll point that out in a moment. So we have, with the last legislative session, adopted a negative tax adjustment so that employers and employees will enjoy the fact that our trust fund is in healthy financial condition and that the interest which has been earned on that trust fund is contributing a great deal to it. In addition to that, certain penalties and interest which are paid into the trust fund form the training and building fund of the department. These funds are earmarked for various training and building programs within the Employment Security Division and allied type activities. We also have an appeals system in place which operates at both the directors and the commissioners level at no expense to the claimants. If you have any one of your constituents who has problems in regard to unemployment insurance payments or from employers who have claims and think they're being unjustly billed, please contact us. We have an appellate system which is free to the appellant going all the way up to the commissioner's level. After that, it becomes a province of the courts. We also operate a mainframe computer for our department, one of the two in the state. We've been told by many that it's one of the best operated systems within the state. We use this primarily to pay our unemployment insurance benefits and to operate our labor. We can look at job applicants for their positions. We are just finishing up a 3-year data processing plan that we hope to have in place, which has been mandated by the Department of Administration. We think it's an excellent idea. We are going to be looking very hard at opportunities and hazards and maintaining the security of our system. The employment service, let's turn over to ES for a moment. too bad.
You have 2 minutes.
The goals of the employment service are to provide an effective labor exchange system and to provide the linkages for participants in other employment and training activities to successfully enter that labor market, the job market. Now, the basic mission is to assist these workers to find suitable employment, and employers to find the workers. Employment is the end result of a series of basic services, and here are some of the ones which we provide. Registration and assessment, job development, soliciting job openings, job referral, vocational counseling, job search assistance, job seeking skills, workshops, placement of job seekers, and employer services such as screening and testing of applicants, job employer information. We also participate in government programs such as the Work Incentive Program, that's WIN, and the Job Training Partnership Act, you may have heard referred to as the JTPA. And this is done through cooperative agreements with other participating agencies. Once again, I refer you to the handout in the last column, and you will see there that the local offices which we operate throughout the state, which are listed in the second column, provided those 202,670 services to employees. And of course, with each one of these services provided to an employee, an employer somewhere benefits from this activity. As you see, there's a kind of a laundry list there of the kinds of services that includes. It does not include the number of job orders which we receive, nor the number of other kinds of employer contacts. But we do operate these programs out of our 19 job service offices. The 19 offices are listed in the second column. I won't go through them. You will note that virtually every community or area of any size is represented by a job service office. And I have a staff ranging from one to about 80 persons in each one of these locales to effect the services which I've listed, both unemployment and employment. Once again, I can obtain that information by election district if you would like. In this last year, our job service offices registered and had on active file 104,301 job seekers. And that represents about 45% of the Alaskan workforce. So you see, people in the state depend on us. People in the state know us. People in the state come into our 19 job service offices and expect service. The job service also was able to make placements in 43,011 employers' job openings. The impact on the economy of this is substantial from two standpoints. First of all, every time we place a person in a job who's drawing unemployment compensation or work incentive program benefits or other welfare programs, we effect a savings to those funds, both welfare and our unemployment insurance trust fund. In addition to that, if we service someone and they go to work, let's just say, a week earlier than they would have otherwise, that represents tens of millions of dollars added to the economy by the businesses and by the extra work that these job seekers do. It has been correctly argued that throughout the United States of America, 33% of the persons who go into job service or who seek work go into job service offices, and only about 5 1/10% of those persons actually got their jobs who are working, actually got their jobs through job services. I am happy to say and gratified to say that in Alaska, over 20% of the persons who are working now got their jobs through job service offices. And that's not to minimize the contribution of organized labor and their placement activities, but over 20% if we assume a turnover of one person per position per year. We're working on a formula to make a more accurate assessment of exactly the economic contribution of workers going back to work earlier using the job service, both the savings to the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, which of course was reflected in your taxes and mine, in taxes paid by employers and by employees, and to the welfare programs which are represented. We also this last year expanded our job information network to 7 new sites. Now that's where a person can come in and have instantaneous information about jobs or about workers. This is Barrow, Nome, Kotzebue, Bethel, Dillingham, Glen Allen, and Tope. In fact, every one of our offices except Dutch Harbor, and that is a possibility for the near future. This is going to help both job seekers in rural areas and employers in rural and urban areas. You've probably also seen our TV show on the North Alaska Network. That's done in conjunction and cooperation with the Job Training Partnership Act activity, and that lists jobs for persons in remote locations, and as you notice, it sometimes has information about different kinds of jobs and how to go looking for work. We are also working on another pilot project, a Zenith toll-free number, so that persons anywhere in the state can call up and get information about job openings, or employers can call and find out about workers. The work incentive program, I mentioned that, it's called WIN, is based on the welfare program Aid for Dependent Children. And in cooperation with Health and Social Services, we operate a WIN program. We operate the side which tries to put people into jobs. And I must say that we are rather successful, because last year we saved the state $1.9 million in welfare payments by assisting 888 recipients who were receiving this aid to families with dependent children to find jobs. And the Alaska program ranks second nationally in this effort. I also serve on the Governor's Child Support Enforcement Commission. We are going to be looking at more dollar savings, which are affected by more effective collection of child support monies. Now, you may think, what's this got to do with tax money? Don't forget that every time someone receives aid for dependent children or food stamps or other kinds of welfare, some parent somewhere is probably not furnishing their fair share of the child support. So the non-custodial parent in some cases, as a matter of fact, in 72% of the cases, are neglecting their child support duties. And it's the object of this commission, and we're going to be working on that in order to try to make more effective collections, reducing, once again, welfare expenditures. The targeted jobs... Oh, excuse me, I want to talk about vets for a moment. A few headlines recently talked about veteran programs. Alaska exceeds goals. I can't crow about this too much. We did exceed our goals tremendously, but I must say that we slipped from second place in the United States to sixth. We only reached 170% of our goals. And so I'm going to be looking into that to see if we can't improve that. The Targeted Jobs Tax Credit Program is a program designed for employers to put certain targeted disadvantaged individuals to work and receive direct tax credit write-offs. Last year, we issued 1,970 tax credit certifications to employers, which generated millions of dollars in tax savings. I'm sorry I can't tell you how much, because, of course, that information is privy and is private only to the employer. I would say, though, the employer is eligible for about $3,000 the first year and somewhat over $2,000 the second year. So even if we took a rather conservative figure of 2,000 persons, saying we made $2,000, rather, with a tax saving of 2,000 persons, we're talking about a considerable amount of money, $400,000, is that not right? This money stays in the state to help generate economic help. When goals are set for us in our division, in our department, we take them very seriously. If we set them for ourselves, if they're set for us by the governor, by the legislature, we take them very seriously, we produce. 5 years ago, we began a concerted effort to help seafood processing companies find Alaskan workers for their jobs instead of bringing them in from the lower 48. 1984 was a record. We started out with a few hundred placements about 5 years ago. 1984 was a record year for this effort because we filled 8,235 jobs in the seafood industry through our 19 job service offices. I'm very proud of that record. This is a partial answer to Representative Boucher's query about what can we do about local hire and Alaskan hire. For one thing, of course, you're well aware of the problems we've had in the courts. The Constitution says under the Commerce Clause that certain governmental entities can operate programs which give preference to workers, as they did in the Boston case. That failed for us. We are now, that failed for us because of the Privileges and Immunities Clause, which says that every American citizen has a right to go anywhere in the United States and find work. And that's kind of the dilemma we're up against. In some foreign countries, and I recently received a report at a convention which I attended, some persons from the Interstate Conference of Employment Security Agencies took a look at what was happening in some foreign countries in regard to employment service programs, and they found that most employment service programs in other countries required employers to list jobs with the job service. Now, if the seafood employers can be encouraged to list jobs and we can make that kind of an inroad on placing Alaskans in seafood processing work, shouldn't maybe we have some kind of a program to force all employers to list jobs with us? My answer to that is no. We would rather earn the faith and the trust of the employers and the workers who come into our office. If it becomes a mandatory program whereby everybody has to list a job with a job service, then it becomes routine. It becomes a pro forma exercise. Just what the heck, we'll call a job service, and then we'll go and hire for the person who walks through the door or who otherwise contacts us. We do not urge that at all. What we want to do is work with all employers in the state, as we have with seafood employers, and any programs which the commissioner and you can design in order to encourage persons to use us. We're there. The workforce has increased over the years, but we have been able to keep up our level of services and increase them, as you will note from other information which the commission will furnish you. Our staff has not increased over the last 10 years. In fact, it's decreased. And I must say that I'm very proud of this record. The workforce in Alaska, however, as recently reported by Time magazine, has increased over the last 10 years. How would you like to lodge a short guess as to what percentage the workforce in Alaska, and I'm talking just about the persons working, have increased over the last 10 years, 1973 to 1980 through 1983? The greatest of any of the United States of America, and more than twice as much as the second place state, 92%. And if you count on the unemployed persons, the figure is very close to 100%. That's a 100% increase in the workers, virtually, or workers available in our state. How do we do this? Well, I have a fine staff of dedicated individuals. I've enjoyed the excellent support of the commissioner's office and of the legislature, and of the governor's office. I have just, we have just finished with my ESD, Employment Security Division team, formulating a five-year plan, which will be on the commissioner's desk for review and approval. And I do want to say that we are helped by a number of other organizations. The International Association of Professional People in Employment Security has an organization called IAPES. And matter of fact, my girl says, are you IAPES having another meeting? I say, no, it's IAPES. This organization is working nationwide to help further the ends and to help disseminate information about employment security. I have some copies here. I'd be glad to lodge with your clerk if you need something to start your fires with tonight. I know you get an awful lot of handouts. If you're interested, please just browse through it before you toss it out. This organization has helped us a great deal. Last year, I was in Texas to a meeting of employment security directors. I was very inspired by the words of a Dr. Wilbur Cohen. Who's Dr. Cohen? Well, he served a number of important posts in the United States. He's been secretary, undersecretary, deputy secretary, and secretary of health, education, and welfare. And somewhat over 50 years ago, and that's what this 50-year pin commemorates, the 50 years of the Wagner-Peiser Act and the Job Service, he was working in Wisconsin. And he was a student in Wisconsin, and he started his career there by studying employment security and the unemployment insurance system, because Wisconsin, as I told you at the beginning of this, was the first state to implement the UI system. And while he was working in this system, he became very interested in it, and he's followed its course over 50 years. We're actually into the 51st year of employment security and the job service labor exchange. And he said, and from his vast knowledge and experience and from his distinguished career, he said, do we need a labor exchange system where any American can walk into an office and receive help in finding work or in finding training or in getting unemployment insurance benefits? He said, yes, yes, we do. It's part of the American dream. Ladies and gentlemen, it is our job to assure that all Alaskans have that part of the American dream come true. And I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, before he goes on, if you know of any if you know of any nonprofit corporation that needs an auctioneer, he can do that too.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, Jack, if you own a white horse.
I've got an order in, sir. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Wilson? God, we call him the preacher. I'm not sure what we call Jack anymore. Brother Wilson, before you get started, if I could, maybe the facts and figures, I'm not sure that we're really looking at those types of things, and the percentages and all. If you could just give us an overview.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Don Wilson, and I represent the Labor Standards and Safety Division. We administer two programs, one of worker protection and one of public protection. We operate these under a dual deputy directorship. The Deputy Director for Safety administers the Occupational Safety Health Program, which includes industrial hygiene, safety compliance, and voluntary compliance. Industrial hygiene is pretty self-explanatory. It's exactly what the word says, industrial health. Safety compliance provides an enforcement, non-scheduled type of inspection of the actual workforce and workplace. The voluntary compliance acts as a consulting and training function for the employer and the employee. Under the labor standards program, we have the Wage and Hour Administration, which handles all matters of wage payments, minimum wage overtime enforcement, oppressive child labor, and regulation of private employment agencies. The Wage and Hour Administration also acts as the labor relations agency for collective bargaining in the public sector at the political subdivision level. Our mechanical inspection section is a public protection program providing electrical inspection, plumbing inspection, elevator safety inspection, amusement ride, ski lift, and boiler and pressure vessel safety inspections. A third component of the labor standards is a fraud investigation unit, which provides a service to Mr. Shea's unemployment insurance unit through a reimbursable service agreement to detect fraud within the system. I have no handouts.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boucher.
One of the things that really surprised me, Don, and I discussed this with you in the past, is this flex time. How did that thing surface again?
Well, okay, first of all,
don't stick your foot in it.
I'm not going to stick my foot in it.
If you don't want to answer, don't answer, because
no,
I defer to the chairman. I just wanted to throw it quick. It really surprised me. I think it did you too.
The short answer to that, Representative Boucher, is that it never left the surface. It was probably overshadowed by more other immediate needs of the legislature and administration. It's been around, it's going to be around, and while it wasn't in that much in the public eye, it's still been a very active thing for us to be involved in.
Thank you, Don. Jacqueline? Oh, go on, Mr. Chairman. That's the... I have never seen him get done so quick. Never in my whole life. We call him the preacher.
Amen.
I'm going to be brief on this, too. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jackie McClintock, and I'm director of the Workers' Compensation Division. Before I get started, I would like to pass out some booklets that probably will furnish you a much better overview than what I'm going to of the Workers' Compensation Act and the role that we play in it. The first booklet we put out is information for all employers in the state that outlines their rights and responsibilities under the Workers' Compensation Act, and then a guide to workers' compensation for employees that tells the employee by the date of his accident what his rights and responsibilities are and what benefits he may have due him. So I'll just start there and review it one each. The Workers' Compensation Division is made up of two units, the Workers' Compensation Administration and the Fisherman's Fund. And the Fisherman's Fund is unique to the state of Alaska. It is fully supported, including its administrative costs, by a 60% assessment on fees for all commercial fishing licenses sold in the state. The fund pays for medical treatment and care, medications, and transportation to the nearest medical facility, up to $2,500 per claim. In order to be eligible, the fisherman must hold a valid commercial fishing license, and the injury or illness must be directly related to his fishing endeavor or business. The administration of the Fisherman's Fund is under the supervision of the Commissioner of Labor and is under the jurisdiction of the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council. The council is made up of five members, or fishermen, from five geographic areas in the state and are appointed by the governor. The staff of the Fisherman's Fund administer the fund on a day-to-day basis. They pay all claims directly that are clearly within statutory requirements, with all questionable or problem claims being referred to or decided by the Appeals Council. They meet twice a year, once in Juneau and once in Anchorage.
Jackie, how many claims do they generally have each time?
About, as far as to adjudicate or to review, the Fisherman's Fund Council, about 200 to 300 each time. But there's about 1,400 claims per year that come into the Fisherman's Fund. About 46,000 commercial fishing licenses sold here every year. Okay. The staff of the Workers' Compensation Program serves as the administrative support arm of the Alaska Worker Compensation Board and are responsible for the day-to-day administration of the Workers' Compensation Act. In our state, of course, we do not have a state fund. The workers' comp claims are paid directly and adjusted by the employer or through the employer's insurance company. Our staff monitors and audits each and every claim in the state, however, and if problems arise, such as incorrect payment, late payment, or non-payment, then we contact those parties involved and give them the opportunity to resolve that dispute before litigation results. We provide assistance to injured workers, employers, and insurers, and we interact with all parties in the workers' compensation system. That includes attorneys, medical, and vocational rehabilitation providers to assure that claims are adjusted within the intent of the Workers' Compensation Act. We also enforce the administrative aspects of the law, like an employer's requirement to provide their workers with workers' compensation. We mediate problems or disputes in an attempt to reduce litigation on claims, and we provide the overall clerical, technical, and management systems and support for the board's adjudication functions. The board's major function as a quasi-judicial body is to act as judge and jury when an irreconcilable dispute between an injured worker and the employer or insurance carrier exists. The proceedings are less formal than those of a civil court proceeding. However, full testimony is taken either in person or by deposition. And it is very similar to a court proceeding. The board is made up of nine members, as the commissioner stated, four representing labor and four representing management, with the commissioner of labor or his designee sitting as chairman of the board. There are currently four panels of the board, And each hearing is held before the commissioner's designee, who is a hearing officer that works for the division, a labor member, and a management member. No higher review of a board decision is made within the department and can only be reversed upon appeal to the superior or supreme courts. In addition to its adjudicatory role, the board is the one that sets policy and procedures on workers' compensation claims. They recommend amendments to the act and they develop regulations. The board members are part-time and serve only days or parts of days that the hearings are in session. They are appointed by the governor and, of course, confirmed by the legislature. At present, we have one panel in Anchorage, one panel in Fairbanks, one panel that serves southeastern Alaska, and a panel at large, which is located in the Anchorage area, from which we draw members in the event that a regular board member is not available. The division also administers a second injury fund, which, again, a little bit like the Fisherman's Fund. It is supported by a 6% assessment on all benefit compensation payments. And its purpose is to encourage the hire of disabled or handicapped workers. What happens if an employer knowingly hires an injured worker with a pre-existing, or not so much injured, hires a worker with a pre-existing disability, and that worker is further injured as a result of a second injury, then after a certain amount of weeks under certain conditions, the fund reimburses that employer all compensation benefits paid. Basically, that's all I had to say. Do you have any questions?
Maybe I could just add one thing, Mr. Chairman, if I could. On that second injury fund, we're really not sure of how successful that thing is. And I think we're developing some figures now that may be of interest to all parties to see what they want to do with the second injury fund.
We've given those to a management group since then.
Representative Davis.
Thank you. Jacqueline, just a question on this workers' compensation. Is the department going to come in with any proposed legislation on that workers' compensation, some problems that they've had with it? Or?
The only legislation that we have proposed for this year is to add one panel, the two members, the management member and the labor member, an additional panel to the board. We have a lot of claims that are going into hearings. Our regular board members, particularly since they have other jobs in the private sector, are just overloaded. So we need another panel to hear more claims. We do have enough hearing officers at the present time, but we need more panel members to sit to adjudicate claims.
Is that going to alleviate some of the problem with those claims going into litigation? That won't solve that problem.
No, actually, we have a mechanism in place where a pre-hearing format that we do now for the last 2 years, in fact, that if we can we resolve a problem before it gets into full litigation before the board, we have a pre-hearing officer and the injured worker and the employer and the employer's representative to try to resolve that problem before it gets to the board. But the panel that I'm speaking about would hear the claim after it has to go to hearing by the full board. It has to be fully litigated before the board. Did I answer your question?
Not really. But
okay, go ahead. You try it again.
No, perhaps I didn't phrase the question correctly, but I've heard a lot of complaints or problems with workers' compensation laws that exist, and the fact that a lot of them go through litigation. It's a fairly complex law, and I was just wondering if the department was had some proposed changes which would alleviate that.
I don't know, Representative Davis, of any kind of proposal that will ever solve that problem. When workers' comp was first envisioned many, many years ago, it was thought that it would be an immediate and a very simple type of system that would take over from the old tort system. It has not happened. It's become more litigious every day, not only in the state of Alaska, but throughout the United States. I think it's because of the amount of benefits, and it's just a thing that's gotten to be more involved in the litigation process, just like a tort case, basically. I don't know of any kind of statutory amendments that we could make that would make the system any easier. What we're trying to do is gear up our people so that we can handle the claims faster and more efficiently. And I think that's happened definitely within the last 2 years. From 2 years to get a decision in order, we're down to 30 days. And instead of 60, 70, 80 days to get to a hearing, we're now getting people to hearing within 45 to 50 days. So we have accomplished that, but I don't know how to make the system easier. I don't think anybody else does.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I think that there's an ad hoc committee made up of labor and management that have been wrestling with workers' compensation for the last 3 years. And to be honest with you, we're more comfortable if the employer and the employee group get together and propose legislation. They know what, you know, how it affects both of those guys. And as far as we're concerned, they then should bring that to you. And then whatever you enact, we'll go ahead and carry the thing out. And I think that's really the proper format. And we would really hope that those ad hoc groups would keep up with their effort.
For the record, this is the first meeting of the House Labor and Commerce.